Thank you, Rich. Thank you, DJ Ladio. And thank you, everyone, for being here. Hi, my name is Renee. I'm an adult child in recovery and becoming my own loving parent in the world today. I am also learning to play and to have fun in life. And a lot of that happens here on Friday night. I am also learning not only for myself, but making sure my inner kids are having fun too. Most importantly, making sure they are finally getting the safety, the care, attention, love, respect they deserve. Those are five important things I and we went without prior to 12-step programs and ACA recovery. Step 12, I had a spiritual awakening as a result of doing the step work. Speaking here tonight is allowing me to carry this message to other fellow travelers who may still be suffering. And I continuously have to practice these principles, not only here, but in my life today. And I am sure the rest of my life, not only to stay physically sober, but emotionally sober as well. I do take this one day at a time. Okay, let's start with a little short description of what brought me to ACA and a bit of my background. If something I say may be triggering, I won't take it personal or take offense if anyone has to do anything to take care of themselves. My journey may be the same as some, or it may be completely different, but trust me, it wasn't any fucking Brady Bunch. I was born in Massachusetts in a coastal city called New Bedford. It was a very diverse neighborhood made up of many cultures. And in my neighborhood, families were big. And when I say big, I mean large in siblings, usually 5 to 10 kids per household. There was a very large recreational park. And on the east and west side of this park were beaches, so kind of like a peninsula. The older siblings of these families hung around in what we call the front of the park. The middle siblings hung around in the middle, and the younger sibs hung in the back of the park. So as you got older, you kind of graduated to each section. It's strange to me. I don't know much of my own culture or didn't meet many family members on my dad's side. From what I was led to believe is because he passed away when I was 10 years old and he was only 49. And after his death, we supposedly lost touch with his family. That's what I was led to believe. Although during my recovery, I learned that I have a voice and I have connected with a few of his family lately. The don't talk, don't feel rule. Don't feel, don't talk, don't trust that I grew up with doesn't have to apply to me any longer. I have discovered many things my mom never wanted me to know, including race and religion, but also other things too. These issues are why she told me at a very young age she didn't want me. It was the very first thing I remember her saying to me when my dad passed away. And of course, not knowing it at that time, way before any recovery for me ever began, it was my first experience of abandonment. My dad was my caretaker because he was home on disability with heart disease. He didn't change his lifestyle though after his first heart attack. He continued to drink. He continued to smoke. He had a shitty diet. So he had 9 more heart attacks and followed by a triple bypass and then followed by 2 more heart attacks. The last one took his life with just me and him home alone. That's pretty crazy when I have 9 other siblings. And a mom. And he passed away with just me at home alone at 10 years old. My dad was an active alcoholic, but was not abusive towards me at all. My other siblings and my mom took a lot of hits, punches, and verbal abuse from him. He was a provider and a workaholic too, but he treated me differently than all of my other siblings. I didn't know why back then. Family secrets, and I might never know the entire truth, but I do know my mom resented it because she told me, again, I was not wanted and didn't take care of me for the first 6 years of my life. My grandparents did most of the caretaking, which led me to my second experience with abandonment without knowing it. There are also no baby pictures of me until I entered elementary school. I have no clue what I look like as an infant. I have no clue what I look like as a toddler. Probably my first picture was maybe second grade. So I have no idea what I looked like prior to those years. From information I have gathered since being in recovery, I am my father's daughter. Both of my sisters are blonde with blue eyes, and my brothers are all different than me too, except maybe two of them. Hopefully, my next year, I will have more pieces of that puzzle together. But I do know that I was a huge reminder of something that no one wanted to tell me. What brought me to ACA, myself and pretty much everyone in my family of origin. I'm the youngest of 10 children. Both of my parents were alcoholics. The seven siblings I knew were either alcoholics or addicts. It's the only lifestyle I knew. I started doing drugs and drinking myself around the age of 13. I was surrounded by alcohol, weed, cocaine, and ultimately heroin. Before I fled, sorry, some of this is really hard to get through because that onion is still being peeled. And it's okay to cry. It's okay to feel it. Before I fled my family of origin at age 16, I was cleaning up everyone's mess. I was emptying bottles and leaving enough color so I could replace the alcohol with water. I was cleaning messes that contained dirty needles, emptying ashtrays, just not full of cigarette butts, but lots of pot, doing housework, cooking, etc., because no one else would do it for me. All this before the age of 9 or 10 years old. And at 9 or 10 years old, I could see myself going down the same path of destruction. So I decided not to clean anymore. I just decided to escape that bullshit and self-medicate myself too. I started using alcohol and drugs and cigarettes by 12 years old, but not a needle. Although that was really easily accessible to me. I saw it coming. It's all that I knew at a very young age was the chaos, the extreme dysfunction, the abuse, which was physical between my parents and us kids. It was mental abuse for me, physical abuse for me. Shaming, blaming, don't talk, don't trust, don't feel. Sexual abuse, one of my older brothers and myself that I know of was abused sexually by an older sibling while he was high on heroin and allowed some of his heroin using buddies that hung out at my house after my dad had passed away to abuse me also. My role in the family was the caretaker, aka, as I call it, the fucking mess cleaner at a damn young age. While most kids were out playing, I had the role of little mom. I was taking care of her because she became the raging alcoholic even more so after my dad passed away. So I was taking care of her, putting her to bed, waking her up for work, and not just for my mom, but almost all the other siblings also. And I got to the point where it was my turn to escape. And that's when I smoked my first joint, had my first drink, and nothing on earth felt better to me. I was 13. I escaped the pain I felt in my heart and in my body. I escaped the rage I always felt. I always felt pissed off. When I was high, I could be anyone but my true self. I could be the life of the party, the funny one, as long as I had the connection to get any drugs, any drinks that kids my age wanted. I had power. I had an open door at my own home to do any drug I wanted to, any drug I wanted to steal, any alcohol, because everyone was too fucked up to even notice. That was completely my false self. My false self pretending to be so many people at one time, and none of them was me. The one that was me was just hurting, isolating, suffering, in pain, but really not even knowing why. Seeing why, but not knowing why. Just thinking that's the way everything was. That's how it was everywhere. I was the one that was lost. I was hiding in a false self. But today, that false self is the one I refer to as my loving parent. I finally got so scared when I saw the first person in my life, OD. And when I say first person, I've seen several. Back in the 80s was a heroin epidemic, and when I talked about the large families earlier, a few of my friends from the neighborhood still talk and communicate. And there was five of us, and we counted to 135 people in the same neighborhood that all died of HIV from using dirty needles. Four of them were siblings of mine. But my first OD that I saw was my brother-in-law. My sister was pregnant with their second child. I used to babysit because one worked 3 to 11 and one worked 11 to 7 in the morning, 3 to 11 in the afternoon to the evening, and then 11 to 7. So that would have meant my 2-year-old niece would have been home for a couple of hours by herself. They lived close to my high school, so I lived with them during the week, so I would be there for that period of time. And my brother-in-law was sober and went sober for my sister for about 8 years. And he decided one day that he was going to go out and binge and drink all day and started shooting dope. And he shot the same amount of dope that he used to do when he was an addict. And when you're drinking all day and you shoot dope, it just stops your heart. His friends were scared. They didn't know what to do with him. Put him in a cold bath, which brought his body temperature down to 86 degrees. They left him there for 3 hours. My sister was the nurse in the ER that they dropped him off at the front door of. Didn't even bring him in, just dropped him off at the front fucking door. So that's the first thing that I went through. I thought to myself, man, I'm 15. I don't want to end up this way. I had another sister who lived in Florida who came here to get sober. She was only 20, and her husband was 6 years older than her. So he was able to become my legal guardian. And I moved to Florida. And that's not to say that my lifestyle changed right away, because again, it's all that I knew. And I continued to drink and smoke weed and other things at my new school in Florida. And let's just say I advanced with other stuff when those two stopped numbing my pain, including, but not limited to, pills. acid, coke, hash, alcohol. All I was doing was just trying to forget what I left. I just wanted to forget. I never touched heroin. Not that it made me any better of an addict or alcoholic than anyone else who did, because a drug is a drug is a drug. But I was extremely, extremely afraid of it. Thank you, higher power. Even though I didn't know I had a higher power, they have always been in the background. My God has always been in the background because I should have been fucking dead by now. And I didn't even know my HP existed. I graduated high school. My daughter's talking to your cat, bitch. I did graduate high school because I was a little charmer and street smart. I already knew how to use what I had to. I already knew how to use what I had to my advantage because of always being in survival mode. I also was awarded athletic scholarships. But as my critical parent would say, you will or you're going to screw that up too. And yep, when I got to college, I screwed that up. I became pregnant. My second year of college and my second season playing softball. That was what my athletic scholarship was in, the softball. And we'll just say that the coach wasn't very happy with me that I was pregnant. So I lost my scholarship and I lost my spot on the team. So I did the marriage thing. It was the person that I became pregnant with. And the partner that I picked didn't need fixing. Didn't smoke, didn't drink, didn't do drugs. But because I was mentally prepared to change, fix, or caretake, just as the big red book says, I didn't have to do those things that life threw at me as a child. So I became completely fucking bored. I was like, what? No chaos, no fighting, no drama. And my inner teenager decided this was just boring and she was going to bring it. And she was going to create it. And she did. So here comes the critical parent laughing again. I repeated the scenario two more times to an addict and then to an alcoholic. I couldn't change or fix them. They both passed from their disease, leaving me a single mom now with two children, 7 years apart in age. Reality really fucking hit hard that time. I had to get sober, not only for me, but for my kids. My oldest one witnessed a lot of that shit. And needless to say, we are now just putting a relationship back together very slowly. Started the 12-step programs after detoxing from everything, sometimes with no assistance, other times with. A very awesome sponsor finally recommended ACA. Because my shares and other programs were making others look at me like I had three heads. So ACA, here I come. I remember going down the list. I remember going down the list in the ACA workbooks, checking, yep, that's me. I mean, on everything. The first year in ACA, I sat without speaking, just listening, and I would cry. I would cry through every damn meeting. I mean, ugly cry, not the quiet cry, ugly cry, video off. And I knew and I realized this is where I'm going to begin my deepest and hardest recovery. And I will be in recovery working on this damn onion until the day I die, I'm sure. My hope is if anyway, let me get to where I am a little bit today. Alive for one. Again, thank you, HP. Even when I didn't believe or even know my HP was there. I am on my third marriage since sobriety, and we have been together 10 years. It hasn't been easy, but I haven't fled, which is huge for me because that's what I did before I got hurt. I would just pick up and leave. It's easier than staying, right? And also known as the lovely survival mode. I have two grown sons, and I'm proud of both of my sons. High school graduates, college graduates, both have great jobs. I'm not sure if the oldest one is as proud of me as the younger one is, but I did the best I could without anyone being a role model in my life. I had no parental role models in my life. My oldest son saw me at my worst. He's seen me through sobriety. He witnessed some pretty dysfunctional behavior from his own mom. It's what I knew. He was also the first I made amends to, taking all responsibility of our relationship status off of him and owning my own bullshit. As I said, we're working through things very slowly, but I've learned to listen to him. I've learned to give him the space he needs to process everything he witnessed. I can't direct him on how to deal with this. I can't push him to deal with this. I just have to give him the space he needs to process it. My younger son is getting married in less than 3 weeks. And talk about happiness and fear in this whole situation. His dad is one of the ones that passed away when my son was 3 years old. You don't really, I shouldn't say you, let me speak in the I form. I don't really know a person until I live with them. And when I notice somebody's drinking as soon as they wake up and drinking as soon as they get home, it's just a beer. Okay, well, who goes to the bathroom in the morning with a beer before we go to work? So I ask them to either put the beer down or we're going to leave. And his reply to me with a 3-month-old baby was, "Don't let that door hit your ass on the way out." I said, "Okay, we'll be gone by the time you get home." And there we went. I had a good enough job that I knew that I could take care of my two sons by myself. And for the next decade or more, that's who it was, me and my two sons. So my son that's getting married in 3 weeks, why I say it's complete fear and happiness all rolled up in one is I have an overwhelming fear of crowds. And there's going to be over 200 people at this wedding. There's also going to be an open bar. So when I ask you fellow travelers, if you see my name come across that I need reach out, please don't ignore it. Because when I slipped, I didn't do that. And I promised myself that I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna reach out. I'm gonna make that call. Because that's why we're in program. Because we have each other. So if you see my name, February 1st, text back. And another reason why I'm fearful is I'm just not good in crowds. I used to be, but I had a mask. I wasn't my true self. I was my false self, and I'm not going to be my false self. So I'm fearful. Like, how the hell am I going to walk down with the groom in a church with 200 people watching? It's really fucking scary. But if I fall, I think I'm okay to laugh. I'm so happy for him. I've been completely honest with both my sons, and we've had long talks about the wedding. We've had long talks about family members who aren't coming to the wedding, who aren't invited, because this is his day. He doesn't deserve for his day to be ruined. He doesn't deserve on his day to be embarrassed. And it was very hard to have boundaries during such a special event. But I'll take it. I'll take it. Because it's his day. So if anybody has a problem with not being invited in my family or any friends, they can come to me, not him. Completing 12-step programs in different recoveries has taught me how to be the person, the woman, and the mom I want to be today. As I said, me and my oldest son speak more often. We text a lot, and we are even having lunch next month. He's not coming to the wedding either. And I don't understand this, and I'm not going to understand it until we speak, but he doesn't talk to his younger brother either. Now, his younger brother never did anything to him. When I was a single mom and I was raising them, they were the best of friends. My younger son looked up to him as an idol. And I don't know why he don't speak to him. I don't know. And I can't answer that question for my younger son. And it hurts me that I can't answer him. But he knows the truth behind me and my older one. So the one thing he did tell me, because I was reaching out a lot to my older one and he was ignoring it, and I would break down to my younger one. And without program, my younger one said to me, "Mom, you have to stop because I'm the one that's picking up all the pieces. I can't do it no more. I can't pick up those pieces. I can't take seeing you brokenhearted. You have Crohn's disease. Stress is your fear. And stress is what puts you in the hospital for weeks at a time. So you have to promise me to stop. Let him walk through the door." So I made that promise, and I have kept it. My older son knows in his heart my door's never closed to him. He just has to be ready to enter it on his own will. There are times we both fucked up, but I can't tell him he fucked up. It's not my business. He has to admit his fuck up on his own. I'm not going to point him out, and I'm not going to push at it, and I'm not going to push for it. I want to end with what my recovery looks like today. I am loving becoming my own loving parent. What my critical parent kicks in, I can tell her to go take a fucking hike. I haven't connected with my toddler or preschooler yet because that's the one that was so severely abused mentally, physically. My inner teenager is so protective of her. She doesn't yet trust me to support and love them both yet. I'm doing work with my inner teenager so she gains my trust and can finally give up the driver's seat. She's an absolute beast. If my teenager could fly a plane, she would. My teenager is a fighter, but a beautiful person inside, which I am discovering. She never showed that beautiful person to anyone because she was always in survival mode, always had to be in survival mode, always had to kick ass. But she's a beautiful fucking person. Which is why this time around, I am journaling a list of all the shit and turmoil my inner teenager saw and dealt with. I'm allowing her to get all that rage out and letting her know that I am here to deal with it all now. I'm here to deal with it. I'm here to help her through it. She can trust me. I know she was embarrassed, shamed, blamed, lied to, abused, and treated badly. That's why she acts like a badass. So no one will hurt her anymore. Survival mode. And I want to allow her just to finally be a teenager. And how I do that is we play video games, we watch movies, we sit on the floor and have birthday parties. Because she never had one growing up. Never had one. Not even till today. Even if it's not her birthday, we still might have one. Gaining her trust is hard. And this may sound foreign to some newcomers, but taking care of little ones and becoming your own loving parent has become a huge part of my recovery journey and so self-rewarding. As I finally feel true love. That happens. True love. Never felt it. And it brings tears to my eyes when I talk about it and when I feel it. I fucking deserve it. By continuing to do the work, going to meetings, doing service, connecting with other fellow travelers, and learning to listen has truly helped my recovery. But what is helping me the most right now is accepting my past, owning my mistakes, quit blaming my parents and siblings, because it's all they knew. It's all they knew. And again, becoming my own loving parent and loving those inner kids that are with me every day. I think I'd like to leave it right there and thank Roki for inviting me to share my journey, which hasn't ended yet. Thank you again, HP. I'm still here. It hasn't ended yet. I haven't died. For letting my journey continue. And thank you, everyone, for allowing me the space to share my experiences, plural, strength, plural, and many hopes, plural, to come. And the ability to feel all of them, as you can tell, I have. And I am no longer afraid to feel, cry, or love. And that's thanks to everybody in this room and everybody that has been a fellow traveler. Peace.